Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. I'm so glad you guys are tuning into this episode. Whatever it is that you're dealing with today specifically or going through at the moment, I just hope that your takeaway from this episode is going to give you what you need. Is it hope, inspiration, validation, some tips on how to treat this or detox more affordable? Whatever it is that you need today, I hope that that's what you get from this episode. And if you want to continue to help me share my voice and our voice in the community, please go into the about of this podcast, scroll to the bottom, click on that donation link. Welcome to another episode of Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. And I, of course, am bringing you another Lyme conqueror. I just love hearing these stories. They are so inspiring. And hopefully for the listeners out there, that's exactly what they're doing for you, giving you that hope that you may have lost and that inspiration that we need to get through this journey and to know that we can conquer Lyme, because every week I bring a new guest to you proving just that. So I'm excited to dive into this next journey of my guest, Holly. Holly, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me.
Awesome. Thanks, Tanya, for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. So where do we start? It's kind of your show, right? Take it off. I mean, do you remember getting bit by a tick, or did you just get sick one day, or you just start the journey wherever it starts?
So I was working in advertising agencies at the time and was living in a duplex. I'm from Columbus, Ohio. So was near Ohio State's campus in a duplex living, and ended up finding a what I just assumed was a regular bug bite. And I wasn't really sure what it was. It was really just like larger than like around like a half dollar size. Super red, was not a typical bullseye rash. So I kind of like brushed it off. I didn't think too much about it, took a photo of it. Ironically, I ended up 2 months later having another bite, in the same exact spot, same type of bite, which later on I came to find out was a uniform red lesion, which is a Lyme bite. Sent them to my doctor at that point. He did not recognize the rash. My PCP did not recognize the rash as a Lyme bite. But basically, that was probably around like 2013, 2014. And pretty much like immediate symptoms were just like super sudden, severe anxiety. And I remember like my resting pulse rate had increased pretty significantly. I was an athlete for 20 years in competitive roller skating of all things prior. So I had a very, very good health and athletic background. So my resting heart rate generally was probably around mid to low 60s. And that basically went up to a point where it was like mid to high 80s, to the point where I had called a squad to my house because I felt so awful. And they were like, "Oh, you're totally fine. You're in normal range." And I'm like, "No, you don't understand.
Not my normal."
Yeah. Yeah. So that kind of began the beginning of the end. It started the whole kind of downfall, and things just progressively got worse from there. So,
So when you got this initial bite, were you even familiar with what ticks were or Lyme disease or anything?
No, I had no idea really that ticks even existed. I had no idea of the severity. I think I had heard of like a bullseye rash before, but like didn't, you know, I had, up until that point, I had kind of started to have some like GI and stress related health issues due to pressures from a toxic work environment. But, you know, beyond that beforehand, like I had not had any health problems of any kind. So it was all new to me. So I didn't really have proper education.
Yeah. Isn't it crazy how much we don't know? I mean, I was familiar with the terminology of a tick because I remember treating our dogs growing up for fleas and ticks, right? Because of Lyme disease. And so I'd heard about it, but then I truly only thought it was a dog disease. I didn't know humans got Lyme disease. I mean, how it sounds silly, right? But, and that's just, you know, and this is, you know, I love the month of May, right? So,
yes,
because it's always about Lyme disease awareness, and we need to spread this awareness. We need to share our voices, because had we just known, right, that we got this bullseye rash or this mark, we'd have been like, hey, I have Lyme disease. And it could have sped up our journey so much faster, right? And so that's why it's always so important just to spread awareness and knowledge about this, because it is a devastating disease.
Oh, 100%.
So you have a lot of the joint pain and all of this stuff. So when did you first start kind of going to the doctors, and what were they saying?
My memory is really foggy, because I think, you know, I definitely do have like CPTSD from, you know, a lot of that experience, unfortunately, which I think many other, you know, Lyme patients, especially ones who have taken a long time to get diagnosed, can relate to. Mm-hmm. It's an unfortunate byproduct of our medical system, that patients are just not believed. So, you know, and with regards to that, that I, from what I remember, it was more, you know, the symptoms just kind of kept building, and there kept being more and more things that would show up. And, you know, I would try to go to doctors and tell them, like, you know, I'm not sleeping, or I'm having like cold sweats at night, or I had severe fatigue. Like at one point, I was working around like 60 hours a week, and it was a Friday night. And I remember one of my bosses specifically being like, hey, like, what are you doing this weekend? And I'm like, I feel terrible. I am going to go home and go to bed. And this was when I was around like the early 30s, on a Friday night. I was going to bed because I like physically, and I physically could not stand long enough to cook. I was having a hard time standing long enough to take a shower without having to sit down in the middle of it. And so like there were definite red flags going off that were not normal. I was having
for an athlete who's only 30, right?
Yeah. I had severe brain fog. The brain fog continued to progress to having neurological manifestations. So not only did I'm normally like a very chill, easygoing person, not much kind of throws me off my vibe. But I found my temperament was a lot easier. I was a lot easier to anger. I found myself getting, you know, kind of ragingly upset about things that didn't matter. I found myself being like overwhelmed over small things. I had personality changes. I had stuttering, which that was wild. I would also try to, I work in tech, and I've been a tech and advertising kind of UX user experience professional for like 20 years of my career now. And I would be in meetings trying to respond to development teams, and I would have like kind of two trains of thought going, but then I would go to talk and like two words would merge into a word that is not a word, even though I have like a minor degree in copywriting. So like, I'm not just like making up vocabulary to sound cool, you know? So, and then, you know, unfortunately, I had a boss who was not so kind and would often like make fun of me in these meetings of like acting like, oh, I was just trying to make stuff up to sound smart. And, that eventually became a problem that I had to address. So that was fun. And then, yeah, just everything hurt. I had severe depression for almost the entire time that I had Lyme. So, yeah, it's been a lot. So I'd say probably it took me 6 years to get diagnosed properly. And I saw at least over 20 doctors.
Wow. That is just, it's so crazy. That had to have been just really confusing, scary, right? Like when you're saying that you have these two words coming out and that you're like this different person and you had, you know, this rage and all this stuff. Cause I know like a lot of us deal with like the disassociation, right? Like I didn't know if am I really sitting in my living room right now and the TV's on and my friend is standing over there talking to me, or am I dreaming? Mm-hmm. Like I didn't know the difference, you know, or somebody, I will have just had a conversation with somebody. I'd call my dad, "Dad, did I just talk to you? And we just talked about blah, blah, blah." Like it was just so crazy. Like we really feel like we are going crazy. And it doesn't help the fact that most doctors tell us we are crazy, right? You're crazy.
You need help. Yeah.
You're overstressed.
Everything was psycho, you know, everything was psychosomatic. It's just depression. I had one, you know, I'm about 5'4", about 130. I think at my heaviest, I was like upwards of, I think like 145-ish. When I had SIBO, which is small intestinal bacteria overgrowth, for those not familiar, but it was just, I had one doctor who basically just said, "Oh, like you just, you know," 'cause I was having like difficulty with my breathing, which later I came to find out was due to a mycoplasma co-infection, but he was just basically like, "Hey, you're fat." I was like, "Excuse me?" So that was a whole fun bag of worms to deal with that. And between that and I'd say the medical gaslighting, I feel very fortunate for the physician to, I don't want to get emotional, it's hard. Very thankful for those who listened.
Yeah. And unfortunately we have to, it's crazy that we have to be thankful for them. We should just in general be thankful for all of our doctors, right?
Yes.
But we learn along our journey that sadly that is not the case. That is not the case. And it could be for any number of reasons. It could be because they simply are not familiar with Lyme disease, right? Or
100%.
It could be because maybe they're afraid they're going to lose their license if they treat Lyme disease. I mean, there's so many underlying reasons for what it is. And we're the ones that suffer it, right?
At the end of the day, you know, the bureauc- like just the general bureaucracy and, you know, the way that insurance will not cover treatment. Like there's so many compounding issues that, you know, the medical community and, you know, sadly our government does not seem to want to face. And at the end of the day, the only thing that hurts is patient care.
Yep. Completely agree. So I want to go back, if you don't mind, I want to go back to kind of like your work environment, where you have all of this neurological stuff going on, right?
Yeah.
How, I know you talked about it a little bit, was there any way that made you fumble through that and get through that? Or what was that like? Was it just, you're wondering if you're crazy or, you know, and then it probably didn't help if you were already in a toxic workplace, right? Where people don't believe you. Because I remember when I was still trying to work and I'd come in one day and I'd be like, "Okay, I can't bend my arms, right? So I'm not answering the phone today, but I'll do whatever else."
Yeah.
And then the next day I'll come in and I'll be, I can't walk. My leg is literally not moving. And they're like, "Well, I thought it was your arms." Well, that was yesterday.
Yeah.
Lyme disease says today, it's not today. You know, at this time, I didn't know what was wrong with me. I didn't know I had Lyme disease, but I know that it was really hard being around my coworkers that didn't understand. And I was already frustrated because I knew something was wrong with me, but nobody would believe me. And then now I have my coworkers not believing me and judging me. And it was a lot.
So, yeah. There was the agency job side of things, when my symptoms first started, which continued when I went to a corporate environment, but still had two kind of problematic, management situations. But yeah, like when I was at the agency, I had one of my bosses basically accused me of being a hypochondriac. So that was great. And then this other manager that I had would openly make fun of me in meetings. And it was very difficult because, you know, you're already struggling with so much from a physicality standpoint that people don't see and they don't understand the weight that you're carrying every day. And then just to kind of be that naive and kind of like rub salt in the wound. The latter person ended up becoming a problem where I had to go to his boss and say that this needs to stop because this is a medical issue. So it's like, so many times I'm like, I just wanted to give up because it's like, I would rabbit hole every night for probably 4 hours on my phone to try to figure out what the hell was wrong with me because the doctors weren't doing it, you know? And so then you're trying to help yourself. You're trying to save your own life because you feel like you're dying inside and you're screaming and nobody cares. And then to the contrary, then when you walk in to try to have an educated conversation with a medical professional, then you get gaslit and called Dr. Google. And it's like, what other position is the patient left in? You know? So, thankfully my coworkers, the majority of the creative people that I worked with were very kind and empathetic and, understanding and, knew it was an issue that I was dealing with. And, thankfully didn't have to deal with, anything from their end of things, which has been a blessing. And now, thankfully that I've been in remission for 3 years, I now do, I'm a part of a different company now, and I'm on their wellness ERG chair. And so I generally do Lyme awareness, at every company that I'm at every May, to raise awareness around the dangers of ticks and, to provide tick safety tips.
I love that. I love that. It takes a village and we all have to share our voice, right?
Yeah. I figure if I can save one life from the hell that I have been through, then, I have done my job.
Completely agree. Well, thank you for sharing your voice because we certainly need it in this community. So you just, like most people, just Dr. Google, right? WebMD, what can I find? What can I figure out? And I know for me, when I did that, like so many things pointed to fibromyalgia, right? Which we all kind of know what that is. And so when and how did you finally find a doctor that believed you?
Thankfully, my primary care, he has been one of the few who always took my concerns seriously. So shout out to David McClure of Ohio Health. So I don't know if he will be listening, but I will be sending him this podcast later.
Yes. No, we appreciate those doctors that trust us. They may not have the tools in their toolbox to help us, right?
Exactly.
But at least believe us. That's all we're asking. Believe us and help us find an answer.
Exactly. And he has always been more than willing to do that. My chiropractor as well, Dr. Jay Villela, he always did whatever he could in his power to try to help me. And at least if nothing else was my cheerleader to help me get through this. So basically, at some point I realized as helpful as those two gentlemen were here for me locally, unfortunately all my labs kept, obviously know the whole notion of, oh, your labs are fine. Everything's fine. When it's not. So that was kind of the situation that I was at. So I ended up taking myself to Cleveland Clinic Functional Medicine Center, met another great doctor there named Dr. Nathaniel Bergman. I think he's now independent practice or with a different practice at this time, but he was the first physician that I ever had who muttered the words, "I think you might have Lyme." So that was kind of an eye opener. Then I started reading about that and I thought, oh God, I hope not. But unfortunately, we ended up diagnosing a bunch of other, like I had so many like kind of health deficiencies, nutritional deficiencies, leaky gut, ended up finding out, I had a hydrogen SIBO that I had to take care of. I had a vitamin D deficiency along with an omega-3 deficiency and essential fatty acid deficiencies. I had low iodine, a sluggish thyroid, malabsorption, chronic fatigue. So I had like the full gamut. So he at least started me on the path of like trying to get those nutritional deficiencies correct. He ended up leaving. I ended up having another physician at Cleveland Clinic, and she was great as well. And she also said, like, I think you might have Lyme. And so she had asked if my primary care could order the Igenix Western blot, because Cleveland Clinic's Functional Medicine Center, ironically, the doctors were not allowed to order that test. So that puts the patients in an even more difficult predicament, because what happens if your primary care won't order it?
Right.
So, yeah. So, I mean, they basically got the Western blot ordered and worked together on that. I had band 41 come back positive. So it wasn't, I can't remember if I had a second band or not, but I was definitely not the standard criteria for case counting of full five bands positive by any means.
Most of us aren't. Yeah.
Right. So the case counts that they're saying, like, oh, there's 500,000 cases a year. That's not accurate. They're missing a bunch of cases.
It certainly doesn't include you and I. And I can assure you, we both had Lyme.
Yeah.
Yes. That's one of the problems. Exactly.
Yeah. So basically after the second physician that I had, you know, it was very interesting how that place operated, because the doctors clearly believed chronic Lyme and that it was real and that they wanted to help, and their hands were tied by the organization, which I thought was ironic and fascinating at the same time, and painful as well for me as a patient. So I basically went off to find a Lyme.
And now we're talking about the Cleveland Clinic, right?
Yeah, the Functional Medicine Center, yes.
Okay. That's interesting that you say that, because I'm a big advocate in the community, and I talk to hundreds of people, and I've heard nothing but horror stories from, and not to call out the Cleveland Clinic, right, but from the Cleveland Clinic, and we're like, they're not going to do it. But it sounds like maybe they know, right? They believe this, but their hands are tied, and there's nothing that they can do about it. And so now it kind of all makes sense.
And it's ironic to me, right? Because, you know, I think Dr. Mark Hyman, I think, you know, he's, at least as far as I know still, was kind of the whole runner of the Functional Medicine Center. And he talks about Lyme on his own podcast, and yet his center is not treating that. So that's a little bit two-faced to me. Like, how can you acknowledge a condition and then
The government. I think that's what it is.
Yeah. So I ended up finding my first Lyme literate physician, who I will not name because they've asked me not to, as they have seen two Lyme physicians basically get their license taken away. So I will not name that person. But, you know, they did a fantastic job at really trying to, they knew that I was single and by myself. So I was the sole provider to keep a roof over my head. So we had to find a very finite balance of killing off the Lyme while allowing me to not be sick enough to where I couldn't work or perform my job duties adequately.
That's good, so, because a lot of us, you know, we have to keep working because a lot of us have, you know, the sole income. So yeah, I'm excited to hear kind of the different ways that he was able to make you, you know, maybe not have these horrible herxes or whatever it was, so that you could still function and work.
Yeah. Initially I was started on a product called BLT by Research Nutritionals, which was just a general kind of Lyme targeted tincture, if you will. And it probably took me like 6 months. I think I'd have to look at my dosage. I actually just got my medical records that I've not gone through yet. But it took me quite a while it took me about 6 months to get up to the full dosage that they were asking me for, to deal with like the herc thing and all of those symptoms that kind of came along with that. But we also realized too, like, we would have to start targeting the Lyme a little bit first before we treated my SIBO. So then we kind of treated Lyme for a while, took a break. I did a very strict regimented SIBO diet, which was like the low FODMAP diet, and then a round of a generic version of I think it's rifamycin. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. But anyway, did that drug to be able to treat the SIBO. And then once we were able to get past that, then we went back to kind of treating Lyme and my mycoplasma and my other co-infections and such.
Okay, so they treated your SIBO with antibiotics.
Yes, SIBO was treated with antibiotics. Like I said, 90% of my Lyme journey has been without. It's been totally like herbal tinctures, supplementation, dietary changes, like essentially rebalancing the body's systems, working on lowering my cortisol, circadian rhythm, kind of reset, sleep patterns, you know, making sure I'm getting good quality sleep. But the tinctures really, you know, I was totally, you know, I want to say like indoctrinated like everybody else into the Western medicine system. And I definitely think it has its place, but functional medicine has been an eye-opening, life-changing experience for me that I'm super grateful for. If we want to consider silver linings, I learned, you know, so much about diet and food. And if you give the body the right things, it can heal. The only things that I really used during my Lyme journey was low-dose naltrexone. So if people are not familiar with that, it is a fantastic drug. It has a great safety profile. You know, it warns on the label that you'll have, you know, potentially vivid dreams. And I was very scared about that because I'm like, what am I going to dream about? And it ended up being like vivid trips to the grocery store. And I'm like, this is not that terrible. Fine. You know, so that was kind of a relief, but it definitely significantly helped with inflammation reduction. And I didn't realize how poorly I was sleeping until I started that. So it was that. And then I was on Vitaclavir, I think for like a decent high dose. I want to say it was like 500 milligrams twice a day to quell. I had reactivated like Epstein-Barr virus. And I had a whole other slew of viruses that, I don't know how I happened to get. So I found out later I had like West Nile virus at some point. I had dengue fever at some point.
Wow. So yeah, isn't like, that crazy?
Yeah. The labs just kept coming and coming. And I was like, I just had to laugh at some point because I was like, this is absurd. How am I still
alive? Is there anything I don't have?
Yeah. Well, and then between like the, you know, the Lyme and the SIBO, it's like I was at a point, with my Lyme treatment at one point where I was like losing so much weight that the doctors were like, if this continues, like you might have to be hospitalized. So I think at my lowest weight, I was down to around 110 pounds. So yeah, that was scary.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Yeah. So I'm glad that you mentioned diet because diet is, you know, can play a huge role. And, you know, just the food, like the food maps that you just said, right? Like there's so many different things that we don't realize what actually does to our body, right? So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So food can definitely be, food is thy medicine, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So what do you recall some of the things that you did to help reset your circadian rhythm or your nervous system or any specific tips that you did? I know I like to talk a lot about breathing and tapping and, you know, cold showers, and there's just so many things that we can do. And so I always like to hear what other people do.
Oh, there were so many things. You know, I think having therapy was a big component to help get me through that, to try to have a third party, you know, to kind of heal the mental health side of things. I also did like TMS treatment. So it's transcranial magnetic stimulation therapy. So it's a kind of an alternative treatment for depression, which for me was very effective and pulled me out of 6 years of severe clinical depression in about 6 weeks. So it was a total godsend. You know, and as far as resetting the circadian rhythm, I forget what the title of the book is called, but my doctor at Cleveland Clinic, Dr. Bergman, he had me read this book, and it was all in relation to like using carb cycling to help reset the circadian rhythm. And also, you know, if it's sunny outside, to try to get outside and get sunlight on your eyes to help reset that as well for your sleep-wake cycle. you know, and unfortunately, you know, with being as sick as I was, you know, I was still trying to have a social life, but I found myself being at home a lot more than I expected at that age. And I was always, you know, prior to that out doing something and was very active. So, it was hard to kind of be at home, but I ended up, you know, finding solace in that, and as a way for me to kind of be in my own space and my own energy to allow myself to kind of have calm and peace and quiet and allow my body to help, you know, reset itself. And I learned to really listen to what it was telling me. Like if I was trying to push it too much, you know, and you'd have that little voice that's like, I'm really tired, you know, and you have to learn to, when you're in a chronic illness, especially, and you're trying to recover and you're trying to hold down a job, like you become, I think, more acutely aware of what that voice is telling you. And, you know, if you listen to it, it can guide you home.
I love that. I love that. And I got a little distracted. Hopefully we are having a major storm here in Boise, Idaho.
Oh, no.
And it was not going on when we started this podcast 20 minutes ago. So I hear the thunder rolling. And so hopefully you didn't hear all that. And
I did not.
My gosh, that's funny. Okay, good. No, all those things are so important. And I really love that you said that, because I think many of us struggle, right? I've been chatting with a couple of people that are in the younger version, right? In their 20s, mm-hmm. early 30s, right? Mm-hmm. And it's really hard for them to kind of grasp what they're going through.
Yeah.
Because, you know, here they want to be out living their life, just like you want it to be, right? Like, this is not my plan on a Friday night to come home and go to bed.
Nope.
And it's depressing. They're wondering if they're ever going to get their career going. They're wondering if they're ever going to, you know, get married or have children, or, you know, it's so easy to slip into such a dark place.
Yes.
And so you just had mentioned, you know, you kind of got in tune with your body. You found some solace. Is there any advice or tips that you can give the listeners on how to kind of break that barrier of, you know, you're home, you're miserable, you're sick, right?
Yeah.
But how do you get past that? What gave you that oomph to keep fighting?
I think, in all honesty, so I was an athlete from around the age of 8. Up until kind of my mid 20s, so almost 20 years. You know, and I it's kind of funny like how hindsight kind of comes together. And this talking about all this, it's like it's even though I've been in remission for 3 years, like it's still just so emotional. And I'm like, where is all this coming from? You know, I don't see it on the day to day. So but it was an impactful journey, and it's I came to realize that my near 20 year career in roller skating, you know, all of that endurance and stamina and tenacity and goal setting, all of that was not meant for me to become a world-class skater like I had always hoped to be. But what it did give me was the strength to survive. So it gave me skills and tools and a very kind of brute force attitude of like, I'm going to overcome this. I deserve to have a good life. There's way more that I want to do. And I will be damned if this is what's going to take me out. I'm not going to go out like this. Because there was a point before I got diagnosed, I felt so ill. I was literally sitting on my apartment floor, rocking back and forth with kind of like a crisis text line up. And I wasn't going to do anything, but man, that was just so, I was overwhelmed. And I remember sitting, you know, going to take a shower to try to clear my head. And I'm not like a super religious person, but definitely like, you know, the whole universe, God, whoever put me here, I basically got down on my knees and said, you know, I don't care what this is, but I need to know the enemy that I am fighting. And I don't care what it is, I will take it on, but I need to know. And then it was within a couple months later that I ended up, you know, kind of getting confirmatory diagnosis of my Lyme. So the mental health component was a whole other struggle beyond the physical. And of course, you know, both things kind of play off each other in, you know, a good or bad way. But it was just, you know, I want a better life for myself. And that's, you know, I basically just put my head down and said, we're going to figure this out and we're going to get through it and we're going to get our life back.
And look at you now.
That's why it's wild. Now. It's a blessing. And it's, you know, I want to tell people, like, don't give up. You know, if you are diagnosed, don't give up. If you know somebody who has symptoms, kind of a key red flag I tell people and advocate for now. If you are sick as a dog and you are not getting answers and all your labs are coming back and your doctors are saying, oh, you're fine, your labs are fine, and you still feel like hell, that to me is a red flag for Lyme.
100%. And yeah, I agree with, you know, I think everything that we go through in life is, you know, whatever it is, we have to not look at it as like, oh my gosh, I just wasted 10 years on my life because I thought I wanted to be that. Or I just wasted 5 years in a relationship that didn't work out, whatever it may be, right? Like, just like you being an athlete, athletes are very, what's my word? Very, very strict, very regimented, very, right? Like, very hard, strong-willed, strong mind. You have to be. And so it's like, okay, you thought that was going to be your path, right? But look at the amazing things that journey alone, that path, that part of your, you know, just that small chapter of your life, I think played such a huge role into this chapter of your life of Lyme disease, right? Because it was that strong mentality that you were able to dig yourself out of the trenches of this depression, right? And fight and know that it's good. And I just think every piece of our journey, there's always something positive we can take from it. And I know that for me, hindsight, Lyme disease was one of my biggest blessings for so many reasons that you mentioned earlier, right? Like, I'm in touch with my body. I got my eyes wide open to gaslighting is a real thing. Mm-hmm. And maybe I should go back and revert to what our ancestors did, holistic health, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So is it safe to assume that was for you too? Like, was it a journey, hindsight, looking back on it now? I mean, was it a blessing?
In a way, yes. You know, it was very interesting. So when I was first diagnosed, it was like October, I think, I want to say 23rd was the day that I got diagnosed officially. With my Lyme anniversary, as I call it. Looking back then, initially, I had posted on, I think, like my Instagram page or whatever that, you know, I finally got my diagnosis. And I think it was the Tick Chicks, they responded to my post and they said eventually it would be a blessing. And it was funny because I was initially enraged by that comment because I was like, why would you say that, you know? And I look back now and realize, you know, because I had this whole idea in my head of like, oh, I want to be at ad agencies for my whole career. I want to work at some of the big wig agencies and win, you know, cans, lines and gold pencils for creative, you know, commercials and whatever else I was going to get into. And was very much on the in the headspace of like the Mad Men era, right? Like I really had glorified that kind of persona in my head of what I had hoped to be. And I came to realize, you know, after going through Lyme, it woke me up to realize like what is truly important in life. And burning yourself out for a job to win awards for people that you don't know, that at the end of the day, like it won't matter. You know, it really woke me up to kind of getting my priorities straight as far as what I was wanting to build for my life and how I wanted it to be. You know, and now I have such a great gift to not only be able to share tick awareness and tick safety with anybody that I encounter, and I advocate for that awareness as much as possible. But, you know, I've helped other people basically who have had friends or family say, hey, oh, my friend got a tick on them. Like, what do I do? So I've kind of become that go-to resource in my friend group, which has been great. And I hopefully soon here in the next month or so, I will be a peer-to-peer mentor for the Global Lyme Alliance for patients going through active disease and trying to help them through that process. So it's also a way for me to give back and, you know, I continue just on my own journey to learn more and more about health, about nutrition, and just how our energy affects everything. And I just live, it's allowed me to live a better, more fulfilling life.
And to me, that's a blessing.
Yes.
Right?
100%.
Wow. Well, you know, I'm glad you said that, because I do say oftentimes to people, I say, I promise this is going to be a blessing to you. And you don't want to hear that right now, right? Just like you said, right. The tick said that to you. And I didn't understand that maybe it really could make some people angry.
Yeah.
But I say it in the hopes that it will give them hope that what they're going through is for a reason, is for a purpose, right? To try to push them through. So, wow, that was so beautifully said. It's amazing.
Thank you.
It's amazing. I think that the only other thing I really kind of wanted to touch on, because I found it very intriguing, was your doctor who allowed you to be able to work while you were treating. So many people, you know, all of us were all different. We know that, right? There's not one way to treat us. There's not one way to make us get better. There's not one way that we hurts. There's not, you know, all this stuff. We're so different. Mm-hmm. But did he just keep your treatment level like low and slow, which always wins the race as well, right? Did he keep it low and slow so that you just didn't have a herx? Or did he teach you how to manage a herx? And what did that look like if that was the case?
So with my first doctor, it definitely was let's go slower and see how you tolerate things. And, you know, if we feel we can move up, we can and we will. And then you can try that. And if it is too much, then we can back off and kind of work on titrating up slower. Because I was on the research nutritionals, BLT formula. And then I was on quite a few other like Byron White tinctures as well for like Epstein-Barr and mycoplasma and some of my other co-infections. So we basically did that for, gosh, I want to say for like 2 years. And then I kind of felt like I was plateauing. So I began looking around for another doctor, because I just felt like I had gotten a decent amount better, which I was super grateful for, but, the stagnation was kind of irking me a little bit. So ironically, through listening to podcasts, I ended up with my second doctor, which is Dr. Javen Moore. He's a well-known chiropractor and podcast guest on multiple things. If you look him up on Spotify, you will find plenty of episodes with him in it. But he also treats like pans, pandas, mold, parasites. And one of the things I learned from him was, you know, the Lyme bacteria can harbor inside parasites. And even if you've not necessarily seen anything, which I had seen a couple questionable things, very pseudo infrequent over the years, but it gave me enough pause to say, that's not something I've treated yet. So we ended up doing a couple different parasite cleanses. One with like ivermectin. I had done one in the past. And then when I came to him, it was like through Cellcore. So ended up doing
Cellcore has a great one. Yeah.
Yeah. So ended up doing Cellcore parasite cleanses. I did a couple Cellcore binders as well. And then was also doing Carboxy, cause we ended up doing like oat and Dutch tests as well. And, you know, found that at that point I had also had a significant amount of black mold exposure. So that was also added to the laundry list of things. What else? But yeah, I really felt like once the parasite cleanse was done, even though I didn't see anything outward, it definitely significantly improved my energy.
The needle started moving, right?
Yeah, started finally moving again. And you know, we were kind of doing all these things, and you know, at one point I kind of realized like I'm able to do everything that I want to do. You know, physically I was, you know, not going to be able to go out and run a couple miles or anything just because I hadn't exercised in like a decade, because it took me 6 years to get diagnosed and I was in treatment for like 4 years. So, you know, it took a decade of my life, you know, and the younger good years, what you consider the good years of your life, away from me, which was a tough pill to swallow. And, you know, I ended up having to pivot to a corporate career, which I wasn't really wanting to do, but it gave me less stress and a consistent schedule. So the reduced stress was welcome. So yeah, things just kind of fell into the right place when I had to pivot. And I'm grateful I was able to have the wherewithal to make the right decisions for that. And, you know, now to be sitting here in remission, able to do what I love to do. And I'm a competitive pinball player. So I
say, are you ready for it? I've never heard such a thing. I love it. Yeah. And I love pinball. Actually, I was just playing pinball at the pizza joint. I think it was last weekend. I'm like, oh my Excellent. Gosh, I love pinball.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been doing that. I was doing that when I was sick, because it was an activity that, you know, I could do that, took some physical effort, but it still gave me a way to have a competitive outlet and a way to socialize with people, and met a fantastic group of friends, and they literally have been my rock. Between them and my family, really helped get me through this. So yeah, went and traveled all around the world, played in London, I played in Sweden 1 year. So it's really been such a joy to go around the globe and meet all these people and be able to have my life back and be able to eat whatever I want. That in itself is such a gift. But even now, I do really try to stay away from sugar. Don't really have a lot of it in my house. Really just try to stay eating clean, organic, read every label so I understand, know what's in my food. No inflammatory seed oils, like all of that. So it's just become, you know, it may sound a little neurotic to people who haven't had to do that, but honestly, it's like once you're in that modality and you understand how important it is, you understand that food is fuel and it's a healing agent. So it's important to care enough to take the time to read those ingredients and educate yourself. And if you can, make better choices.
Yeah. And that's, you know, always a hard piece to have to completely uproot your diet, right? When we're already sick, we're already miserable. There's no joy in our life. And now you tell me I can't eat this and I can't do that. I mean, it truly does make a big difference in our journey. And just like you said, Holly, you can eat and do what you want now. It's not like it's forever, right? It's until yeah. you get better. And once you get better, most likely, it's just going to be a lifestyle now. But knowing that we can go to the pizza joint and eat that pizza, right? And not worry about it and not beat ourselves up and not have reactions from it. Everything's in moderation, right? But 100%. Getting your diet on track when you're going through this journey is really a huge piece. And I also love that you mentioned that you kind of felt like you hit a plateau about 2 years, right? And I think it's really important for us to be in the zone with our body, because otherwise we don't know this, right? We need to trust our doctors that we're working with for sure. But we also need to trust our own bodies and how we feel. Yes. And so you hit this plateau, and if you didn't pivot and go another way with another doctor, that sounds like one of your big needle movers was the parasite cleanse. Like you may not be here on the show with me today, right? Like you have to, if you hit that plateau and you know you have, search outside, right? Search another way to continue your healing, because I guarantee you there's a way to be 100% symptom free from this illness, because I am, and so many other people are too.
So. Yeah, it was interesting, obviously, definitely I would say, explain to your doctors that you feel you're plateauing and, see what can be done. But, to your point, I just kind of felt like, okay, we've gotten this far. There hasn't been a ton of change. Is there anything else that I'm missing? And so that's when I started looking at, listening to other Lyme podcasts to see if something would resonate or would trigger a thought to say, maybe I should ask my physician about this. When I heard Dr. Moore on, I can't remember which podcast, but I heard him on one particular podcast episode. And as soon as I heard him, I was like, that's my doctor. It was just like a weird, like divine intervention. Like, this is your guy. So, very grateful for such a strong indicative gut direction, that took me, to success. So, don't give up. You can be free from this. You can be symptom free. And it does take a lot of persistence and pivoting and, unfortunately, financial aspects, which can be very difficult for some people with this condition. My hope is that, people and the powers that be will start to recognize the importance of tick-borne illness and the severity of the disease that it can cause, and it will force insurance providers to cover treatment for people, because people are being left sick and they're dying. And that should not be the case in this country.
100% agree. And I just tell people that if they're struggling and what they're doing isn't working for them, always think outside the box, because, like you and I were talking before the show, traditional doctors, that's what we did growing up, right? That's all we knew. And oftentimes when we're dealing with chronic Lyme disease, which most of us have, right? Because we can't get diagnosed in time.
Right.
I think that antibiotics should not be your first choice, right? I'm not saying don't incorporate it. Maybe it will work for you. Mm-hmm. But out of my experience and what I've heard from thousands of other people is that herbals are the way to go. Think outside the box, right? Do other non-traditional treatments. I know hypothermia was my big needle changer. Ozone is fantastic. But parasite cleanses, like no traditional doctor is going to tell you to do a parasite cleanse. I mean,
I find that ironic, because the more that I continue to read, I kind of joke with my friends that I'm like, if you have a trivia contest where there is like a category full of random medical knowledge, I'm your girl. Like, pick me up. I will score that category. I will slay that. We will get all the points. It will be great. I think it's, I think it's important to be open-minded. And the more that you do read, the more other countries seem to do parasite cleanses as a part of like yearly health. Versus it kind of being as much of a taboo subject as it is here, or the fact that it's positioned as, oh, well, parasites are only like a third world country thing. And it's not, that's not true. If you eat sushi, if you eat raw fish, you can find, unfortunately, you know, larvae and parasites in fruit. I mean, it happens. So yeah, I think it's important to kind of, you know, not only look outside the box, but listen to what your body's telling you. And, you know, if your gut is already a mess, like it was mine, throwing an antibiotic bomb in there, in my opinion, you know, that's
just what it is a bomb, right?
Yeah. You know, it's like, that's not the right way to go, especially if, you know, like I had leaky gut, you know, too. So it's, the gut permeability was a huge issue. So that was only going to further kind of destroy that. So yeah, I think it's important to keep an open mind, especially if you're used to traditional Western medicine. And I would say too, as far as doctors go, you know, if you're looking for a physician, you know, instead of wasting your time and wasting your money, you know, call them, try to see if they believe in chronic Lyme, you know, as a condition before you even go see them, and before you waste your time and your money and your resources and your physicality in getting there, you know, so that way you're not disappointed and you can actually find a practitioner that wants to work with you and for you. And then I would say otherwise too, you know, if I tell people now, whether you have Lyme or not, you know, if you're an avid reader and you have a chronic condition, you're trying to figure out what's wrong with you. If you cannot bring, you know, medical, like real medical studies, I'm not talking like, you know, here's what WebMD spat out. You know, I'm talking like real clinical medical studies. If you can't bring those to a physician and have an educated intellectual conversation and dialect with them around your condition and why you think that you may have something related to said thing, then generally I would say avoid that doctor, because if you can't have a conversation, it's not going to be a productive use of either of your time.
Nailed it. Those were some great final tips. Holly, it's been such a pleasure. I kind of adore you. I just that you just have that fight in you, and that nonstop, and that constant want to learn, and that, you know, constant want to share and help others in this community. And I appreciate you. And I'm so, so, so thankful that you are well, you are on the other side of this, and you just make me want to go play more pinball. So
yeah. Thank you. It's been so nice meeting you and chatting with you. And I'm so grateful you asked me to be on this wonderful podcast that you have, and all the work that you're doing. I know that you've been through the gamut yourself with health issues, and you know, the fact that you've been through as much as you've been through, and you're still out here fighting the good fight for awareness and putting in that energy and trying to encourage people who are sick to maintain a positive attitude and that they, you know, that they can heal. I think that's super admirable. So thank you so much for having me. This has been quite fun to share my story. It's been hard, but hopefully some people have found value in it.
I bet they have. And oftentimes I hear that it can even be kind of therapeutic to truly say my whole story out loud, get it out. And then it's just that one more kind of nail in the coffin, right? Put it in the ground and just really heal that mind in it. So I hope that's how you find it was for you.
I do. I still find, like I said, I still find it hard to talk about. I think there's still things that I still need to work on processing personally, but, you know, I guess that's part of my own, kind of compartmentalization, but I'm trying to be out here and have fun and make up for lost time. So
that's what it's all about. Thanks, Holly.
Yep. Thanks, Tanya.
I sure hope you listeners enjoyed that episode. Whether it's hope you needed, a little inspiration today, or just maybe some validation that what you're feeling, what you're going through is real. Maybe you needed tips on how to treat at home, ideas, thoughts, detoxing, whatever it is. I truly just hope it's what you got out of today's episode. That is my only hope, is just to give back to this community in any way possible. So go to the About of this podcast, scroll down to the bottom and find that donation link. Go ahead and click on there, and anything that you'd like to donate or offer is all just going to go to help to pay towards the studio cost.